just recap, but it's on now.
Yes.
If I could recap, I mean, your father was in the Indian Civil Service.
Yes, he ended up as acting governor of the Punjab, and then they came home in 1912.
He'd finished his tour of duty. Yes.
And
you, when did you actually go up to university, Miss Dewey, then?
Well, 1912.
1912,
yes.
I see. Yes.
And I went,
that was
the
Society
of Oxford.
Oh, St. Anne's, of course. Yes, yes. I see.
Very convenient in those days if your family lived in Oxford.
Well, absolutely, yes. And you were based at home while you were studying, yes.
My sister was a senior student.
Were you really? Were you really? Yes. And you did history, did you? Or?
English,
yes. I see. And your sister did history, yes, a little later.
Yes.
And then you went to the War Office Library in 1916.
And there I was for until 1921.
Yes. And
then
you
I'd spent 3 months in doing the index to the first volume of the medical history of the war.
Did
and
you
then,
really?
And then I went back to... I wanted a stopgap because I was going out to India in the autumn.
And then you were out in India till 1926, did you say?
In 1924 I came home.
I see.
And then I was in Oxford and I did a little part-time work in what was in the Nettleship Library. And then I went to the, when they were starting the, what was in the Women's Service Library, But then I remained for the next 42 years.
I mean, your aunts were active, and your mother, did you say your mother was a suffragist?
No, she wasn't, she, well, after all that, she didn't really even come across it, because all the time that she was in India, the women's suffrage movement didn't exist.
Yes, of course,
in India.
Yes. So were you attracted to the job because it was connected with the women's movement, or was it really just a library job that you wanted?
It was one of these accidents, you know. I mean, I went, I wanted a job, and I went to Miss Haddow, with whom I had coached when I was in Oxford. She was a Donovelli Mage. And she said, well, have you been to see the Women's Service Bureau? I think they could... you. And so, no, I hadn't been to see them. So I went up to London and saw them. And then a few days later, they wrote to me and said, we ourselves are starting a library, and would you care to apply? And I don't know how many applicants there were, but I secured this job, which was then... take charge of really a handful of books and housed in a converted public house in Marsham Street.
Where was it?
Marsham Street, Westminster.
I see. So it moved to Wilfrid Street rather later, did it?
Well, it started in this converted public house, and then Miss Sarah Clegg, and that was rather an interesting story too. Because after the First World War, the society was in a very bad way. Of course, the people that belonged when they were working for the women's vote dropped off because the women had now got the vote, and they knew that the younger ones would get it done in due course. And so the committee thought that they would really have to bring the organisation to an end, and they went to see Mrs. Fawcett. And Mrs. Fawcett said, no, this wouldn't do at all. You must have more courage. There's work for you to do. You're the only people equipped to do it. And so they went away. They still didn't see quite how they were going to manage to keep it going. And then she was addressing a small meeting at their then office in Victoria Street. And she said, when in the height of the movement, her maid came up to her one day and said, there's somebody to see you in the drawing room. She rather scolded the maid and said, you know, I've told you not to admit people who haven't got an appointment. She thought it was one of these beggars, you see. And she went downstairs, and there was the beggar who handed her a cheque for £1,000 for the movement. And Mrs. Fawcett looked round the room, said, is anyone here who'd like to give me £1,000? I know very well how we can spend it. And she got that £1,000. And then they took this converted public house, you see, in Marsham Street and launched out into the library. And then the donor of this £1,000 became interested and gave us a freehold site in Marsham Street and the buildings upon it. First Women's Service House was in Marsham Street.
I see. The donor is still anonymous. Is he or she?
No, she was Miss Sarah Clegg. She's not anonymous now.
I see. Mm.
But when she died intestate, leaving us with a debt, which was still...
Yeah.
Still. And then the buildings were bombed in the war, you see.
I see. And then you moved to Wilkins Street.
Well, then the library was evacuated to Oxford, which was here for 8.5.
Where was it in Oxford then?
St. Anne's took it in at Hartland House.
Did they really?
Most generously.
Good Lord.
They're good to me.
Good
and to the library. And then the Westminster City Council compulsorily acquired the site as well as what was left of the buildings, and so we were still homeless. And then the Westminster Public Library took us in for 5 years while we were looking for premises, and then we went to Wilford Street.
I see, so you went to Wilford Street sort of in the early 50s,
was
it?
We went back to London in September 49, and we were there for 6.5 years, so that takes us to what, about 56, doesn't it?
I see, yes. Yes. So really, the Wilford Street premises is quite recent.
That's very recent, yes.
Yes, I see, I hadn't realised that. So anyway, what happened when you applied for the job then, Miss Dewey? Did you go before an interviewing board or something, or what? What happened?
I went up to see the secretary, Miss Philippa Strachey.
Oh, yes.
And the editor informed that I had been engaged. And then I just went up and started in on the...
What was she... What did she say to you when she was interviewing you? I mean, did she tell you what was involved in the job, and did she give you an idea of what was going to be involved?
I mean, well, she had no idea what was going to be involved. I mean, her original idea was to have a small library for the use of members, and what the object was in those days, see, it was a time when women were coming into public life for the really virtually the first time. They were then able to become MPs, and the professions were opening to them, and what their committee felt they wanted was a library which would preserve the whole history of the women's movement and provide also a good working library on social and political and economic subjects for the use of these women who would want this for their work. And in those early days, we got MPs and their secretaries and the new professional women and so on.
I understand. So it wasn't originally a women's library at all, particularly. It wasn't a library of women's history.
It had the two sides always. They always intended to preserve this history and make a special collection on that, but also to provide a working library for to educate the woman citizen, in fact.
I see, and the woman MP... Well,
yeah, MP, if the women MP felt she required education.
Yes, I see, I understand. I hadn't realised that was the
Now, of course, recently we've abandoned the second half because it's quite unnecessary.
Well, and also impossible, I would have thought.
Impossible,
I mean, how far in your... Say you take the first 5 years, or first 10 years that you were there... Or really, could you describe how it evolved then? And did you try and keep the two halves up all the time?
Yes, but it was being used mostly for the secondary. At that time, I mean, people came in who wanted to what the birth rate was, or how your local authorities were getting on with housing and the we had always a board with the progress of bills through Parliament up in it so that they could see how things were, any bills which were likely to be of interest.
And you made a collection of all the cuttings concerning women from the papers.
Oh, yes, of course, so you've seen our newspaper cuttings.
Yes, I mean, that was a big enterprise, isn't it? I mean, so you kept, you really were, in a sense, a reference library for social questions in, of interest to women, as well as a history of women's...
Yes,
yes. I hadn't realised that at all.
Yes, and it was in those days used more, I should say, for that purpose. And of course, when they came to Oxford again, the library had a different use because it was the students, and especially the students doing the Bonnet House diploma, found the library useful.
Mm. Yes.
They had memoranda. They got very far, and gradually they got a bit further. And that all the, also in type, all the acts of Parliament passed well from about 1832 up to whatever the date of the type memorandum was.
Yes.
As they affected women with some notes on what they did. So there's quite
Oh, well, I mean, I must read this. Obviously, it's rather insulting for me to come to you without having read it, isn't it?
Well,
I didn't
it's
know
not
that
only this is not in the history, of course. It's all a separate type memoranda.
But people would come in, say they wanted to know the rate, the birth rate from 1870 to 1920.
Yes, yes,
say
yes,
you would then find this out, would you?
Yes, and we then had all the we had a very good collection of the government statistical reports and the reports of the various departments and so. But
and you also had all the Hansards, of course.
All the Hansards,
didn't you?
Of course, our Hansard is a very important.
Yes. Yes. I mean, so anyway, you would then write a letter, would you, or something, to the person who'd asked the query.
Yes. Yes. And enclosing a the typescript of what the answer.
And then you'd file away the carbons.
File away the carbons.
Yes. I see. So eventually, you built up a sort of reference.
Yes.
Did you really? I hadn't realised that at all. Well, well. Anyway, I mean, I must obviously go away and read this, but still, I mean, Philippa Strachey seems to have been a key person, actually.
Very much so. She became secretary, I think, in 1907.
That's secretary of the London Society.
Then the London Society, yes. And, of course, the London Society did most of the work for the National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies because of its geographical position.
Yes. So I'm not quite clear on the, this is really rather elementary, but the London Society for Women's Suffrage becomes the London Society for Women's Service, doesn't it?
Yes, and the London, of course, before it became the London Society for Women's Suffrage, it had had an enormous number of different
sorts of splits and things like that, weren't they?
Sometimes they quarrelled over something and divided, and then it finally became the Fawcett Society and Fawcett Library.
When did it, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when did it become the Fawcett Society?
Well, after the war, I think.
I see. But when you were there, it was the London Society for Women's Service.
Well, yes, when I started.
When you started, yes.
It was then the London Society of Women's Service and the Women's Service Library. And then, of course, the National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies became the National Union of Societies for
Equal Citizenship.
Yes. And then they split, as you know, into two. And half became the Towns Women's Guilds and half became the National Council for Equal Citizenship, which merged with the Women Citizens Guild, which finally disappeared altogether, whereas the Towns Women's Guild, of course, have gone gone on. But of course, they are the direct descendants of the constitutional movement. They aren't now, strictly speaking, feminist, I suppose.
No, or political, particularly.
Political. It's much more a meeting place for women, rather like the women's institute
in
the country.
Yes. Could you, I mean, you see, I don't know the most elementary things. Could you tell me sort of why there was this split between the Towns Women's Guild and the Women's Service, the equal citizenship thing?
Yes. Well, I was at the meeting at which it occurred.
Were you? Mm. Yes. It was an actual split, wasn't it?
Mrs. Hubbock saying it was the Women's Service going to be the cat that walks by itself. And anyhow, we couldn't see eye to eye with them on all the items of their policy. You see, they became interested in a very wide range of social reform.
You mean the Towns Women's Guild did?
Well, it was still then the National Union of Societies for Equal Citizenship.
I see, yes, yes.
Just before it had split into
yes.
two. Mm. And they went in a very wide range of
reform.
Quite general social reforms. And our committee at that time didn't see its way to endorsing all of these. Mm. It was standing at that time for equal opportunities for women in employment. And that was what it decided it was better to work independently on one object.
I see. Because the Equal Citizenship Society had gone in for family allowances and things like that.
Family allowances, yeah. Gone in for birth control, gone in for a whole lot of things which members probably of the Women's Service were anyhow divided on, but anyhow they didn't consider it was the work that they were equipped to do.
I understand, yes. Because there was really quite a lot of rather strong feeling about the family allowance question, around about 1937.
But Millicent Fawcett had always been against it.
Yes, yes. So, there was an actual split, was there, at that point?
An actual split. We disaffiliated, that is to say. It wasn't so much a...
It was simply an agreement to go in different directions.
Yes, yes. There was a deal of bitterness.
Was there?
Part of the NUSEC. Mm. But,
well, you always get personalities mixed up with issues in this sort of thing, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. What actually happened, I mean, this at the meeting, you remember, what actually happened? I mean,
it was at the annual general meeting, and the vote was taken in the hall as to whether we or not we should disaffiliate, and the decision was taken by the general membership, not just an arbitrary action by the executive committee.
But Eva Hubbock remained with the...
She had always been, she was the secretary at that time, of the National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies, and was succeeded by Gertrude Horton, of course, who was an angel. Then she came and signed the letter to the Fawcett Society, the Towns Women's Guild, in her time with them. But unfortunately, there was a serious quarrel, and she was very, very badly treated by them, very badly indeed.
Anyway, she's at the centre of...
She came along to and succeeded Miss Stretchy as the secretary of the Fawcett Society.
I see, it's very interesting. You've got your Towns Women's Guild created now, and you've got the split in the equal citizenship part into the Towns Women's Guild and what?
The National Council for Equal Citizenship joined up more or less with the Women Citizens Associations. I mean, when that was one locally, it was the other. Anyhow, they more or less amalgamated, but they have disappeared.
I see, yes. Yes. And the Fawcett Society in relation to these is what?
It doesn't really relate directly, excepting that we share the same ancestry. They both derived from the original, both these derived from the original National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies.
Yes.
And of course the Fawcett Society, in its origins, was the oldest of the lot.
Yes.
It's right back to
the 1860s, yes.
Yes,
I see. Yes. So anyway, when you first went there, what was this pub like, Miss Dewey? I mean, what was there?
Well, we had a room with a sort of book direction. It looked rather like a bar behind which I sat, and then there were a few books of the shelves of books, and that was about how we began. More than 37, I think, but certainly there weren't more than two shelves.
And these were on women's history or general referencing?
Yes, women's history more or less, and then Lady Emmett gave us a whole lot of general books. Lord Emmett had gave them before he died, and all gradually built up. You see, there were a few news cuttings, and they developed, and a few government publications which had been got, because you see, during the First World War, the Women's Service Bureau was created, which was instrumental in putting about 100,000 women into suitable war work in the First World War, and it acted as the body which persuaded the government that women were capable of doing.
So you had all this material they'd collected, did you?
They'd collected, mostly news cuttings and government publications. And that Women's Service Bureau became the Women's Employment Federation. When they came to an end, staff went and created the Women's Employment Federation, which has now got a new name, which I've forgotten. Anyhow, it's still going on.
I see, so that really split off.
Really, you see, all these lines come down from the original constitutional movement.
Yes.
Whereas, of course, the the militant movement came to an end.
Yes, that's what a lot of people...
The work has been carried on by the inheritors of the constitutional...
That's exactly what Lady Stocks, for instance, told me, or Dame Marjorie Corbett Ashby.
Yes.
You know, when it actually comes to doing things after 1918, it's the non-militants who are most active, on the whole.
Yes, on the whole, yes. I mean, there are a good many of the militants, of course, joined the...
The non-militants.
Necessarily disappear in time.
No, of course
but
not.
Of course, they had been all out for the one object, and... there was no particular reason why they should have gone.
No.
Point of fact, they didn't. I mean.
Yes, of course there was the six-point group, wasn't there, which...
Oh, yes, the six-point group. I don't think it's quite dead yet, is it?
No, I think it still exists. But that was, in a way, I mean, that's quite separate from...